Thanks for coming. This is short-term medical volunteerism in low-resource settings, professional and ethical concerns, and this is done with my colleague Ramin Asghari from New York University. We have no disclosures. So several decades ago, when healthcare practitioners were interested in providing international health abroad, they would obtain training in public health and tropical medicine, then sign up to be deployed abroad with non-government organizations, NGOs, or other organizations to provide humanitarian services. They'd make this service their career, and they'd become experts in practicing in low-resource settings. However, with growing interest in global health and increased ease of travel recently, short-term volunteerism among medical providers and students has grown significantly. These providers continue to hold clinical practices in their native countries and travel abroad for days to weeks on vacation time or employer-approved time off. They may travel abroad on finite mission trips, on short-term assignments as part of an ongoing organizational presence, or as part of a service learning experience for students. It's often organized by academic or non-academic medical centers or members of their faculty, religious or community groups, or NGOs. And they may be traveling abroad after a disaster or for a non-emergent humanitarian cause in a chronically low-resource setting. There's many considerations, though, when providing medical aid abroad, and oversight of any of these considerations is possibly problematic. Short-term volunteers may have less training or experience in some of these considerations, and thus they may be less prepared for humanitarian service in low-resource settings. Some of these might include clinical knowledge or technical training in global health or low-resource medicine, contextual understanding of their program site, which may include the culture, language, demographics, epidemiology, healthcare infrastructure, or public resources, may include contextual understanding of humanitarian situations themselves. It may be a lack of local relationships or organizational precedents, and they may lack plans for sustainability or long-term collaboration. So in this talk, I'll go over some of these ethical concerns in three categories with respect to patients themselves, communities and populations at large, and to the providers themselves. Then briefly review two ethical approaches to foreign medical volunteerism, and then finally go over some solutions that others have proposed and that we propose to address some of these concerns. So as far as ethical concerns for patients, these often involve the potential for harm to those who already have such few resources. Providers who want to provide service abroad must be familiar with diseases that are less common in the West where they may be practicing and that might be endemic to third world areas. Some of these include malaria, tuberculosis, vector-borne diseases and tropical diseases, diseases among displaced populations, or those that may outbreak after a disaster. Diseases may also present differently or in more advanced stages, given that there's a lack of primary care and preventative medicine in many of these sites. Providers also may not be able to rely on the robust referral and consultation systems that they may be used to in Western countries. As far as making clinical diagnoses, we, as providers, have developed a clinical gestalt that's based on the local epidemiology, the risk factors for each patient, physical exam findings, and test results. In an unfamiliar setting, though, our gestalt may be incorrect. We have to be familiar with local customs that may influence the health of those individuals. Those considerations might involve local customs for pasteurization, food preparation and storage, dietary and sanitary habits, water treatment systems, use of available vaccines, and antibiotic resistance patterns. We also have to keep in mind that many of these factors can change after a disaster. As far as using tests to help aid in our diagnoses, we have to keep in mind that these tests may have a different positive or negative predictive value based on each symptom, physical exam finding, or test result, given that patients have different exposures, risk factors, and epidemiology than we might be used to. And these things need to be considered before ordering these tests. Many tests were developed and verified on populations with very different characteristics, so they might have very different sensitivity, specificities and pretest probabilities, and we need to keep that in mind when interpreting the results. Given these things, the test may not be as useful in diagnosis and may lead us to incorrect diagnoses. Also, the risk of the test itself may outweigh the benefits when there's this lower diagnostic utility. Other considerations for tests, if it's a non-invasive test and we're using it with less diagnostic utility, it wastes resources. For invasive tests such as biopsies or lumbar punctures, this provides a risk of harm to the patient themselves. As providers in low-resource settings, we also may need to play the role of the advanced laboratory systems that we might be using in the West. We may need to prepare cultures, biopsies, biopsy pathologies, or smears for blood and urine and interpret the results. If we're not used to doing this and we do it improperly, we may misdiagnose the problem and then give inappropriate treatments to a patient or withhold the proper treatment that the patient needs. If we are not used to storing or reconstituting some of these medications and we do it improperly, it may be harmful to the patient. And we may need to play the role of the technician or pharmacist that does this normally. We need to know the environmental requirements for many of these test supplies and medications. And for things such as insulin, vaccines, lab reagents, and disinfectants, they may become ineffective or possibly harmful to patients with the heat and extreme humidity that exists in many of these low-resource settings, especially with the lack of refrigerators and frequent power outages that occur. And when we try to provide Western-style treatments, this may be inappropriate for the setting as well. Several examples of these include perhaps a surgeon that's traveling abroad and fixing a spinal fracture in a patient, and they use some sort of metal hardware in the West that may not be locally available. If that provider leaves and then a local provider has to deal with a complication, they might not be used to the anatomy of that hardware or be able to assess it for infection or other factors if it needs to be removed. Another example is if a provider travels abroad with a bag of medications that might not be available locally either. And firstly, local providers might not be able to recognize or manage the complications, side effects, or toxicities of some of those medications, and patients may not be able to refill those prescriptions after the provider has left. And providers also need to ensure that they have follow-up care for their patients after they've left. They need to be aware of local resources and also have long-term plans for if complications develop from their care and what those patients are going to do to follow up. Ethical concerns for communities often have to do with delivery of care that's not beneficial for the patients and that might also cause harm to the community at whole. Without prior relationships, short-term volunteers may not have adequately assessed the needs of the community, and also keep in mind that these needs are continuously changing. Providers doing short-term volunteer projects may also burden local systems to follow up with their health care. These systems may not have the capacity to follow up on the care that they provide in addition to the care that those traveling abroad may have as well, and providers need to have communication and collaboration with the local communities to ensure that this ability to follow up exists. Other consequences when you're lacking local collaboration. So foreign care might be viewed as superior by many local patients, and it can create distrust or non-reliance on their local healthcare system when foreign medical providers arrive. One example is if a team brings a portable ultrasound machine. Patients may hear of this machine and want to be served by that clinic so that they can see this machine or receive care by it. You know, for example, a woman that's pregnant and wants to see her fetus and her local healthcare clinic is not able to give her that. So this can also take pressure off of local governments to fill these healthcare voids, improve their own medical education, and also to advance local technology. Providers that travel abroad also need to be efficient with their use of resources and keep distributive justice in mind when choosing who will get the resources that are available. And many providers who are not used to providers that travel abroad also need to be efficient with their use of resources and keep distributive justice to rule out diseases rather than becoming adept at the art of clinical diagnosis, and this wastes resources. There's also many differences in social, moral, and political values. So, for instance, dissonance can be created which constrain the collaborative relationship by things such as the style of dress, the relationship with colleagues, the hierarchy in the social or healthcare system. And in some communities, community consent may be indicated in addition to personal consent of each patient. There's also issues of clinical and social justice. So some communities may prefer to distribute resources and deliver more aggressive care to an important community member or to an older adult as compared to a child, especially given a higher child mortality rate, a greater significance of elders as leaders and the potential for immediate rather than delayed contribution to the community. For providers with different backgrounds, these can be very difficult decisions, and it can also strain the relationship with the community when some of these ideas conflict. Providers traveling abroad also may need to play the role of a public health agent and aid in surveillance and quality control. Many of these low-resource settings may not have local systems for public health, surveillance, or quality control, or these systems may be impacted by a disaster. So providers going abroad may need to fill this role, and this may involve activities such as mass vaccination or other prophylaxis, health education and information campaigning, promotion of sanitation, proper medical and waste disposal and water treatment, or outbreak prevention, detection, and containment. Volunteer organizations also need to have quality assurance over their volunteers and be responsible for the complications of those providing medical care abroad. And lastly, medical aid can be viewed as a political tool. So if, for instance, a aid group goes abroad and is providing aid, medical aid to one side of a civil conflict, that can be used as a resource for that side and influence potentially their political conflict, which is not our role as medical providers. So ethical concerns for providers are often involving harm to patients and communities as well, and also to the providers themselves potentially. There's also many issues surrounding justice and clinical decision making. So low resource medicine inherently involves many difficult clinical decisions that need to be made with low resource distribution. This can be emotionally burdensome when providers are used to very different outcomes in the West. Several real-life examples of such decisions that had to be made in Haiti involve cases such as a 60-year-old that had a myocardial infarction, a teenager that had extensive burns, and victims of head injury, polytrauma, and gunshot wounds. For providers in the West who are used to throwing every resource that's available at these patients and, you know, attempting for much better outcomes, it can be very difficult to have to withhold some resources in allocation and allocate them to patients that possibly have less severe injuries to benefit more patients in the long run. Many of these difficult decisions are compounded by cultural preferences that might be very different than their own social norms, or by pressure from distressed citizens who are trying to use their position on the social hierarchy to influence the allocation of these resources. There's also a significant stress or ethical burden that can wear down on aid workers over time and long-term may contribute to their dropout from this type of work. Experienced and knowledgeable medical workers are a resource for these patients, so efforts to decrease the stress in this group can contribute to developing a cohort of volunteers that can benefit patients abroad long-term. Short-term volunteers might be less prepared for this type of work in low-resource settings, and they might be more vulnerable to stressful responses or to making emotionally driven decisions in many of these difficult clinical situations. Organizations need to give stress management training and on-site support to their volunteers, as well as briefing and debriefing before and after trips that involves clarification of expectations for their volunteers. Organizations also need to ensure that they have adequate on-site supervision and the manpower to supervise trainees, especially since trainees are not may not be as prepared for some of these stressful situations that occur abroad. They need to interview their potential trainee volunteers for their motivations, their decision-making capacity, and understand their understanding of their own professional boundaries. Many of these trainees may practice medicine that's beyond their home standards or beyond their expertise, and this places the trainees themselves and patients potentially at risk. Insufficient preparation and supervision also strains the organization itself and uses their resources. So there's two views that have been used to approach foreign medical volunteerism, the right-based approach and the charity care view. So in charity care, it's acceptable to send abroad any provider that has interest, funding, and time to travel abroad, because otherwise the patient may be worse off. This view risks exploiting the vulnerability of some of these populations in need and creating power-imbalanced patient-provider relationships and removing the pressure from local governments for improvement. It also validates providing lower standards of care, which disrespects the dignity of these patients and discounts their equality as fellow human beings. So increasingly, medical volunteerism abroad is being viewed in the rights-based approach, which is based on equality, and includes that those with fewer resources have the right to assistance and protection from those with more resources, and that care should be provided as part of our duty as global citizens. So several solutions have been proposed to address some of these ethical concerns. Regulation has been proposed, but just briefly going over this, there's no international organization that has the scope or the resources to sort of police the thousands of different trips that go abroad each year and by thousands of different NGOs, academic institutions, and community groups. Standards have also been considered for clinical knowledge and technical skills that might be required of these groups when going abroad. They're established as sort of a minimum set of requirements that groups should have, but over time they sometimes become the maximum. Donors won't be willing to fund more than just that minimum set of requirements sometimes, and organizations aren't able to put the resources forward to go above those standards that have been proposed. Standards would also have to be incredibly broad for all the different types of sites around the world, the situations as far as disaster, chronic, low-resource settings, and the different types of personnel in medicine and public health that are providing this care abroad. They would also have to be very broad as far as coverage of clinical knowledge, the different technical skills, and cultural considerations as well. So we propose that short-term volunteerism can be a very effective way to provide medical aid abroad, but volunteers need to be better prepared. This preparation ideally should be integrated long-term throughout medical school and residency education, but for now there's many people that are already past these stages and still wish to gain some of this clinical knowledge and these technical skills that they may not have in their daily medical practice. So we propose that there's a need for a comprehensive and collaborative venue, such as a conference, that can address potential ethical and professional issues and create a global framework for guidance, monitoring, and coordination between different groups. This could be a collaborative venue, which involves research sharing between NGOs and academic centers, a site for development of standardized and centralized educational resources that could be developed by an expert panel from NGOs and academic centers, and also a site for hands-on technical training that those who lack some of these skills could learn at these sessions. Organizations who send their volunteers abroad need to interview and assess potential volunteers and ensure that their staff has necessary skills and knowledge to be providing these medical services abroad. They need to communicate with the local communities and evaluate what is needed, and then collaborate and form long-term relationships with other humanitarian groups and then with the local communities, governments, and healthcare systems. They need to create systems for quality insurance and on-site support and supervision at their sites, and provide their volunteers with briefing, debriefing, feedback, and stress training before, during, and after their trips. As volunteers looking to go abroad, though, we need to make sure that we ourselves are prepared. We need to seek out training in global health, public health, and technical skills, learn about the sites where we potentially be volunteering, and involving many of the considerations that we went over before, and then seek out organizations for supporting these trips that are doing some of the things listed in the previous slide and are using an ethically conscious approach. And we need to make sure to treat only within our abilities, to aim to provide Western standards of care but with limited resources, and ensure your own quality of care. We need to approach conflicts in clinical justice thoughtfully and then beware of the act of charity care. All right, thanks very much. If you want some resources, we've listed them there and references, you can email either of the email addresses at the bottom. So thanks.